WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. If you're familiar with the work of political satirist Bill Maher, you probably know that he thinks religion has done way more harm than good in the world. In his new film, Religious, he describes religion as dangerous. Religious is a satirical documentary in which Maher travels to religious sites around the world, ranging from the Vatican and Jerusalem to a Muslim gay bar in Amsterdam and a Christian theme park in Orlando. The movie is directed by Larry Charles, who also directed the movie Borat, wrote episodes of Seinfeld, directed episodes of Larry David's Curb Your Enthusiasm, and has been a showrunner for Entourage. Bill Maher and Larry Charles are my guests. Later, we'll talk with Stephen Waldman, the founder of BeliefNet, the largest website devoted to religion and spirituality. Let's start with a clip from Religious. In this scene, Bill Maher is talking with Democratic Senator Mark Pryor of Arkansas.
Do you believe in evolution?
You know, I don't know. Clearly, the scientific community is a little divided on some of the specifics of that, and I understand that.
I don't think they are.
No,
I think they pretty much agree.
I don't know how it all happened. I mean, I'm certainly willing to
accept it couldn't possibly have been Adam and Eve 5,000 years ago with a talking snake in a garden, could it?
Well, it could have possibly been that.
Come on. This is my problem. You're a senator. You are one of the very few people who are really running this country. It worries me that people are running my country who believe in a talking snake.
You don't have to pass an IQ test to be in the Senate, though.
Bill Maher, Larry Charles, welcome to Fresh Air. Bill, one of the things you say in the movie is that religion must die for mankind to live. Strong words. Do you think in responding to religious extremism, you've become like an anti-religion extremist?
I'm not an extremist at all. I believe in the doctrine of I don't know when it comes to the afterlife. And to say I don't know about the afterlife is really the only reasonable and also humble opinion you can hold. Anybody who believes in personal gods that are really the result of a long 2,000-year-old game of telephone, personal gods who you pray to and who perform miracles and fight with devils and so forth, that's extremism. That's extremely irrational. So I don't think I'm the extremist, no.
Larry, do you share Bill Maher's strong anti-religion views?
Yes, I think I do. I think we both very much in sync on our philosophies about religion. I think we both look at the world and we see all the madness taking place in the name of religion. It's almost like we're surprised there aren't more people who feel this way. It seems to be the only reasonable approach to it.
How did you find the interviewees for the movie? And Larry, I guess I'm interested in hearing what you told them, because you've had a lot of experience from the Borat movie of how to get people to talk to somebody not quite getting what the context of the conversation was going to be when the movie's made?
Well, first of all, we made a master list of people we wanted to talk to. We started with the Pope. We started with God, actually. We even talked to God, but God was so boring we actually cut him out of the movie. But we then tried to reach the Pope and the head of the Mormon Church and the head of Scientology. But, of course, you can't get to those people. And so, they are protected by many filters and you just can't get to them. So we had a master list and we kept on reaching out to people and saying, are you interested in being involved in a documentary about religion? And many people love to talk about their belief systems, and so there was no problem getting many, many people to talk about it. And sometimes I would tell them who the interviewer was. If they asked, I would tell them. If they didn't ask, I didn't feel obligated to tell them. In the United States, sometimes that was necessary. In Europe, it was less necessary. Bill is a little less known in Europe, so it wasn't as volatile a dynamic initially as it was in the United States.
But you didn't say, we're making a satirical film that's going to be very anti-religion, would you be interviewed for it?
I don't think that would have been a wise thing to say if I wanted to make this movie. I kept it a much more general level of we're making a movie about religion. We want you to discuss your views, which was true.
Now, when you told people we're making a movie about religion, we want you to discuss your views, and you didn't mention that Bill Maher was the person behind the movie, and then Bill Maher shows up to do the interview. And Bill, you're pretty famous as, you know, in general, and you're also famous for not having a lot of room for religion in your life. So when you'd show up to do the interview, would some people just kind of draw back in shock?
Well, yes, they, I'm not going to lie, that is the truth. That's what happened, is that I would show up at the last minute after the scene was lit and the person was sitting and very often had been talking for quite a bit of time about their religion with Larry or somebody else. And we did, on a number of occasions, see someone's face register distress. But nobody got up and tore their mic off and walked out of the room. You have to understand, first of all, that religious people, like everybody else in America, are media whores, and they want to be on camera also. And also, you know, if something is as important to you as religion is to these religious folks, I guess you feel an obligation to defend your faith. And, you know, if you can't beat Bill Maher, what are you going to do against the devil?
You tried to shoot at the Vatican and you were thrown out. What did you want to shoot there, and how did you end up being shown the exit?
The fact is that we didn't intend to get inside the Vatican. We never thought we would. But after we talked to Father Foster, he offered to take us inside. And he took us right past the guards and everything. And we didn't even know what we would do. We wound up on the floor outside the door of the Pope's apartment. And that's when things sort of got out of control and we were escorted out.
And tell us who Father Foster is.
He's this priest who was the chief Latinist at the Vatican. He's an American. He's from Milwaukee. And he has an apartment and an office there right down the hall from the Pope. I guess it's a leftover position, really, from the time when Latin was much more important. I asked him how often he sees the Pope. He said he met Pope John Paul once in 1979 when he first became Pope, and the Pope hadn't talked to him in 26 years after that. So apparently the Latinist job, it's not vital.
I think you made a bad joke in Latin.
Right.
So this father, you talked to him outside of the grounds of the Vatican, and
right. He
seemed to be agreeing with you that the Vatican was a little too opulent.
Yes.
Oh, among other controversial things he said. That was the least, you know, he said, what did I say, Larry, that he thought that he didn't believe the Jesus story.
He didn't believe the Jesus story. Bill mentioned hell, about going to hell, and Father Foster said, oh, hell, that's a bunch of nonsense. You know, I mean, he debunked virtually every doctrine of the church.
He said, to sum it up, he said, you know, people need their stories, which is pretty much what we were saying.
Yeah.
Did it surprise you that he was talking that way, since he's employed by the Vatican?
Yes.
And did you ask him why he talks that way since he's employed by the Vatican?
I think he's at a point in his life, you know, he's an older man, he's been there for 45 years. I actually think that most of the Catholic hierarchy probably feels this way. They all know that they're stories, and they know that they're perpetuating these stories for the masses. They're all PhDs, they're highly educated men, they're rational men on a certain level, and they recognize the difference between the myths and the metaphors and the poetry of it and the reality, the literal truth of it, you know? They have no problem reconciling that for themselves. It's the masses who are not allowed to sort of be part of that process.
We opened the interview with a clip from the movie in which, Bill, you're talking with Senator Mark Pryor. Why did you choose him?
Well, because he's, I think, from the Bible Belt. And I think when Senator Pryor says he thinks that life may have started 5,000 years ago in the Garden of Eden, he's being sincere. I don't think he's faking it for his constituents, as some politicians do. John McCain has been doing that for a year now that he's running for president. He's pretending to be a pious man, and he never has been. But I think Senator Pryor really is like so many of the people in the heartland of this country who are Bible-believing Christians.
I think it's fair to say one of the things you feel particularly strongly about is the mixing of religion and politics. What are some of the things that each of you have heard during this presidential campaign that you find most troubling?
Well, there's a clip on YouTube these days of Sarah Palin in one of her churches, and she's standing before the congregation, and some, I don't know what he is, a minister, a pastor, somebody is putting his hands on her and telling her that he's praying for her, and then he says something like, "I'm going to cure you of witches." So in my book, that's a witch doctor. You know, if you're talking about getting rid of witches in someone's life, that's a witch doctor.
This is a pastor from Kenya who was visiting her church.
You've seen it?
Yes.
Okay. So it's pretty frightening to me that it's the year 2008 and we're considering for the second most important job in the United States of America someone who's being ministered to by a witch doctor.
And Larry, your vote?
Well, I would say, you know, when I think about it, that the Scopes trial was in 1925. So 80 years later, we're still arguing about putting creationism in the public schools next alongside of evolution. I mean, it's like teaching magic and chemistry. It's really like such a regressive step that that frightens me. And the blurring of the line between church and state that really began with Jimmy Carter, ironically, as a Democrat, he introduced Jesus into the campaign. And once he was ineffective as a president, the Republicans seized upon that and drew in all these religious voters, created the moral majority, et cetera. And ever since then, we've sort of been on this Christian nation path, which is very much not in keeping with the founding fathers, despite what people try to say. So I think that trend is very, very scary to me.
The film starts, Bill, with you saying that the end of days used to be God's business, but now man can end the world too. Are you concerned when somebody in politics believes that the end of days is near, that the second coming is near?
Absolutely. You have identified.
Why?
Because if the most important thing in a person's life is their fervent religious belief, and I'm sure that George Bush would say, and he's not kidding you, he means it, I'm sure he would say his religion, his relationship with Jesus, his views of the afterworld are the most important thing in his life. Sarah Palin would say the same thing. Okay, if the next thing out of their mouth is that they believe end times are going to come within their lifetime, and I'm quite sure Sarah Palin believes that, that's very frightening because they're not against the world coming to an end. It's actually a good thing because they want to meet Jesus. They want to bring it on. It's called the rapture. Does that sound like a bad thing to you? It sounds romantic to me. I wouldn't refer to the end of the world as the rapture. I would use a name that connoted something bad.
My guests are political satirist Bill Maher and director Larry Charles. We're talking about their new film, Religious. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is political satirist Bill Maher, and his new movie, Religious, is a comic satire about religion with real people in it. It's not a fiction film. It's a nonfiction film. And he travels around the world interviewing religious people and going to religious sites. Also with us is Larry Charles, who directed the film. I think in answer to your question, I think one of the problems that some people who are secular have with your just like adamant anti-religion views is that there seems to be no room in there for the kind of religion in which, yes, it's stories, but they're stories that have meaning. They're stories that are metaphorical. Their religion comes along with this sense of
like
always
what?
Questioning. Wait, let me finish. With the sense of always questioning, like, why are we here? What's the purpose of life? What's the purpose of death? How do we get through life's ups and downs? I mean, religion supplies like rituals and
why
people
are they
who can.
Good?
Well, for a lot of people, rituals, for instance, at a time when a loved one dies, it's a structure to help you through a horrible experience, reminding you of the eternal nature of death with somebody who's been through it a lot with a lot of people, whether it's a rabbi or a priest or a pastor. I mean,
but you can get it without resorting to
you can.
Ancient
oh, of course you
myths.
Can. You can. Okay. But on the other hand, for a lot of people, there's comfort in resorting to something that has been going on since ancient history.
But is it ultimately soothing to believe in an illusion that isn't true? You know, in the end, isn't that the illusion being shattered going to be more traumatic for that person than believing in something that isn't true? That's the question, I think, the equation that you have to balance.
And religions bring with them so many horror stories. I will not argue with you that people do get comfort from religion. What I would say to you is that it comes at a terrible price. And that price is the way religions tribalize the people on Earth. Most of the wars we've had were in some way religious. You look at the history of mankind from ancient times to the present, and you go through the list of wars and crusades and suicide bombings and honor killings and the oppression of minorities and the oppression of women and having sex with children systematically and exorcism and burning witches. I mean, stop me if you've heard enough. But, you know, that's a pretty big price for comfort that can be gotten other ways. I'm not religious, but I have my traditions, you know. I always have Christmas dinner with my sister. There's a tradition that makes sense because I like her, she's my family, and I really want to do it. I'm not just doing it because we've always done it, and it doesn't make sense anymore. Religions have to be re-looked at to see if they still make sense.
Bill, you mentioned in the movie that when you were growing up, your father was Catholic and your mother was Jewish, but the children, you and your sister, were raised Catholic. And the impression I got from the movie is that you didn't know your mother was Jewish until later in life. Is that right?
Well, when I was about 13 is when it came up. Yes, I had never given it a thought because when you're a child, you do whatever adults have you doing. And if it's part of the routine from the earliest time you can remember, you really don't question things. So from the earliest I could remember, my father, my sister, and I went to church and did Catholic things, and my mother stayed home. And I never really thought why. I never gave it a thought. And it came up when I was about 12 or 13, and then it was just like, oh.
So what was your reaction when you found out that your mother was Jewish? And, you know, technically in the Jewish religion, if you're born to a Jewish mother, you're Jewish. It's the mother who determines.
Well, I know people say that to me all the time, and I think it's the most ridiculous thing in the world that people would, A, propose to tell me what I am because of some law they're listening to, and B, it's a Roman law. So I'm going to cop to being a Jew because of what the Romans said 2,000 years ago? I mean, it's just really silly. I mean, that's my heritage. I was raised Catholic. My mother is of Jewish descent. But, you know, as soon as I became a thinking adult, I said, no, I don't want any part of any of this nonsense.
So your mother's briefly in the movie. You talk to your mother and your sister in the church that you used to go to as a child. And your mother in the movie explains that she and your father stopped going to church because the church was opposed to birth control, which they were using. So they sent you to church even though they stopped going?
Well, as I say, my mother never went.
Right, right.
My father stopped going, and we didn't go to church anymore after I was, it's about when I was 13, because I was, I remember I was about to get my confirmation is the sacrament that you do at that age. That's where you get a middle name. I was about to get a middle name. To this day, I do not have a middle name because right before that, my father just stopped going to church. And I always thought it was because he didn't like Pope Paul VI. He loved Pope John. He was the liberal pope. And when he died in 1963 and Kennedy died that year, I think a lot of lights went out in my father's life. And Pope Paul was too conservative. So I wanted to find out from my mother. And when she told me, you know, it was because of the birth control thing, it really blew me away because, of course, I thought my parents only had sex twice for my sister and myself. And the idea that they were using birth control was just quite shocking.
Did you read the Old and the New Testaments before making the movie?
Yes, actually, a number of times over the years.
Yeah.
And again, just before we made the movie. And we carried all these holy books with us because we would cite things, cite quotes. And so we became pretty conversant in it.
I took a course in the Bible at Cornell when I was a undergrad. Not that I was ever a grad, but I did go to college. And when I was in college, I did study the Bible. Yeah, I remember I had a course.
Did you find anything in the Old or New Testaments that you thought, well, this is actually beautifully written, or this is actually a really interesting thought
that I should keep with me,
whether I practice religion or not?
The prescription against eating lobster, I think, is excellent because I don't like lobster. It is a dirty fish or sea creature, and I don't like the way they kill them by putting them in the boiling pot. And so I think the thing against lobster, I'm totally down with that.
To me, it reads like a Pynchon novel.
Yeah. I mean, the New Testament is obviously different. The New Testament, if you strip away all the magic tricks and the bells and whistles and the nonsense, the message of Jesus is not only beautiful but revolutionary. The idea that the meek shall inherit the earth and the poor and the powerless have just as much dignity as the powerful and the rich, that was a very new idea at the time, and it has not gone out of style, I might add. And it's a wonderful message. It's a shame it gets lost amidst all the other nonsense.
Bill Maher is the producer and star of Religulous and the host of the HBO series Real Time with Bill Maher. Larry Charles directed Religulous. We recorded an interview with Larry Charles about his other work, directing Borat, writing episodes of Seinfeld, and directing episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm. We'll hear that interview sometime soon. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.